Matthew chapter 13 and verse 22. I would just like to continue on a little bit with what our brother has brought before us. In connection with the life of David, because we find in the life of David, as our brother has brought before us, so much to encourage our heart in the pathway that's before us. And we find that in the life of David, there are 8 times that he weeps. 8 times that David weeps. And each time there's a corresponding period in the Psalms where he also weeps. And it's been an encouragement to me to hear our brother give a little summary as to the difficulties in David's life. And we don't have time this afternoon to look at that subject, but I'd just like to look at 2 of the times that we find David weeping. But before that, I would like to look at this verse in Matthew chapter 13, verse 22. And I understand the teaching of the portion that's before us here in connection with the sower. And the seed that falls on by the wayside, the hard-packed wayside. And there's also the seed that falls in the stony place. There's the good ground. But here we find the thorns. He that receiveth the seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word. And the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. As I say, I understand the teaching of the portion, but the thought here that I'd like to bring before us by way of application is, and he becometh unfruitful, or as Mr. Darby says, it becomes unfruitful, would suggest that there was a time when there was fruitfulness. And sometimes, you know, I look in my own life and I think, you know, there used to be a little fruit for the Lord's honor and glory. There used to be some fruit, but there's not much fruit right now. And what is it? Perhaps the cares of this life and the deceitfulness of riches have come in. There are those things, the necessary things of life, perhaps, that have come in. And now there's no longer fruit. Now, I believe David experienced that in his pathway. And I'd like to look back to 2 Samuel just to look at a couple of portions. 2 of them. The first one is in the 15th chapter. We had brought before us this morning the thought that there are many difficulties that beset us in the pathway. But there's always the resource for us to be able to get a glimpse of Christ in glory, to be able to gaze on to that moment when we'll be caught away to be with the Lord Jesus, to be with him, to be like him for all eternity, to gaze on his lovely face, to see the wounds in his hands, in his feet, in his side for all eternity. And for us to have a glimpse of that, it seems to take us out of this scene. But sometimes it just doesn't seem to work. Sometimes we're so weighed down by that which has beset us that we just can't quite get a glimpse of the Lord Jesus in all his glory. It's so difficult. And with that foggy situation, we can't see the Lord in all his beauty and all his glory. And it gets us down. And so we can talk about seeing Christ in glory, but it just doesn't seem to lift us out of this scene. Why? Why is it? Here in 2 Samuel chapter 15, and in the portion that we're going to read following, we perhaps see one of the lowest points in David's life. where Absalom has usurped the throne. The beginning of the chapter, it says, Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And the 13th verse, there came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom, and make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. And we know the story that David flees, and we know that there's that which is happening in Israel, which is, naturally speaking, is not of God. And David could look at the circumstance and say, it's all wrong. Every bit of it's wrong. I'm having to flee, and it just doesn't make any sense at all. And oftentimes, there are periods in our life that are just like that. And we find that there are those in Jerusalem that have a real tenderness for David. And so we find that Zadok and the Levites, they pick up the ark, and they come running out after David. And I'm sure David appreciated the affection that these had for him. And he sees them coming with the ark. So let's just look at that, the 24th verse. And lo, Zadok also and all the Levites were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God, and they set down the ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king said unto Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he say thus, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good to him. In the 30th verse, or the 29th verse, Zadok therefore and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. You know, it seems that David could have appreciated them bringing the ark and saying, you know, let's take the ark with us. Everything that's going on is dead wrong. It's absolutely wrong. Let's just take the ark. And naturally speaking, we might say he would have been justified in doing so, but David doesn't do that. David knew where the ark belonged, and he said, take the ark back. Take it back. It may be that the Lord will bring me back again, but if not, let him do with me whatsoever he pleases. And we find here in the 30th verse, David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet and wept as he went and had his head covered. And he went barefoot, and all the people that was with him covered every man his head. And they went up weeping as they went up. Now let's go over three chapters to the 18th chapter. A lot has transpired in these few chapters that we flip over. And Absalom is slain. And in the last verse of the 18th chapter, we again read of David weeping. And I thought that perhaps we have the answer here as to why sometimes we're not able to see a glimpse of Christ in glory. And we find here in the 33rd verse of 2 Samuel 18 that the king was much moved. And sometimes we feel circumstances in our life, and there's a great trial that's come upon us. But I would say that many of the trials that come upon my own heart, most of the difficulties that come upon my own heart, are a result of my failure and a result of my own self-will. And by that I might mention, you know, I might find myself, and this isn't always the case, but I might find myself very, very sick. But maybe for the last 15 years, all I've eaten is nothing but saturated fats, greasy saturated fats, solidly for 15 years. And then I find myself very sick. And it's a great trial to me. I might find in my household that I have a child that's given to fits of anger, tremendous fits of anger. And yet, maybe as a father, it's been such for the last number of years that I've been a father that's provoked my child to anger. Maybe I find myself unemployed, and it's a great trial to me. But maybe when I had employment, I conducted myself in such a way that I find myself unemployed. There are many things in our lives that bring great trial to our hearts, and the trials are very real. But often, not always, but often, they're a result of my own self-will. And I believe that David here, he's owning that before the Lord as to the situation with Absalom. And so we read here, the king was much moved. And he went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, thus he said, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." I've looked at this portion and I've considered David here. And how what he does in this verse, five times he owns that Absalom is his son. And we don't know what transpired in Absalom's early days. We do know with Adonijah that David never said to Adonijah, "No, you can't do that." Never once in his life. What transpired in Absalom's life, we don't know. But we do know this, that here, David is owning before the Lord that Absalom was the one that came forth out of his own loins. It was his son. And it's been an exercise to my own heart in my own failure to see David here and what an encouragement he's been to see that David was much moved and he went up to the chamber over the gate and he wept. And I would just suggest that oftentimes, when we're not able to see a glimpse of Christ in all his glory, it's perhaps because I don't have a chamber over the gate as to the difficulty into which the Lord has placed me. And when I find myself in great trial, oh, if there's a chamber over the gate, a little place that I can go and just own the Lord's hand upon me, oh, it makes the way for those clouds to move, to be able to get a glimpse of the Lord Jesus in all his glory. But often there is those situations that, first of all, they need to be owned before the Lord. And if I don't do it, the fog remains. And I can't see the Lord Jesus in all his beauty, in all his glory. And that which is to be my portion for all the endless ages of eternity. Just may I encourage each of our hearts, and my own heart mostly, that when I find myself in great difficulty, to be as David here, and how he found a chamber over the gate in which he could say, "My son, my son, my son, my son, my son." You know, we would find if we read the following portions, to realize David comes back into Jerusalem. There's great liberty once again in David's life. But there was that time when it looked in David's life that nothing was right. Absolutely nothing was right whatsoever. But when he found that little chamber over the gate, oh, how it brought peace into David's life. And I believe David could pen those words as our brother has brought before us. "He restoreth my soul." I believe that took place in the little chamber over the gate. Oh, may we each find a little chamber over the gate.